Good morning and welcome to the KGNC Golden Spread Agribusiness News Hour. I'm your host, Bryce Hudson, and today we're talking some Texas wheat on this Monday morning with Ms. Steely Fischbacher, a part of Texas Wheat. How are you doing today, Ms. Steely?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on this morning.
Of course. It's always nice to talk a little bit about what's happening in the wheat industry. And I know right now in the Panhandle, we're getting close to wrapping up this year's harvest season. How did things pan out this year?
Well, like you said, pretty much wrapping up across the Panhandle here. We're well over 95% complete. Just a few remaining loads coming in. Our friends in Oklahoma and Kansas are in the same boat. Oklahoma, they had pegged at the end of last week at 99%, and Kansas close to 90. So kind of that Southern Plains hard red winter wheat harvest is concluding. You mentioned, you know, what are things looking like in the field? We've talked about yields for a while now. I think in general, below average and disappointing is how most of our growers would describe their yields. But we have had some fields, you know, do very well. Some that have been surprising on the high end, a few that have been surprising on the low end, but in general, just below average yields just due to the drought conditions, this crop-based. In terms of quality, our quality tests have remained very positive for this year's crop. Protein is averaging 13.2% over all of the tests that have been done at this point, and test weights are staying over 60. So that's a really good sign, an indicator of the quality of this year's crop, which is great for us as we try to market it to domestic mills and overseas customers.
Well, Steely, I know that wheat is kind of one of those crops that's, you know, we finish harvesting and then it feels like, you know, immediately jumping right back into the next growing season. How are things going to look out future-wise? Are we pretty optimistic for the next growing season for this winter wheat and this wheat crop?
It'll kind of hinge on what our weather forecast does for the next couple of months. You know, as we near August, that's prime time for us in terms of preparing to get a crop in. So some of the things that'll be ongoing in the meantime, between now and then, is we'll get our variety trial data out. So our growers will be able to see, you know, what varieties perform best in their regions. You know, we had a drought year, so which varieties did the best in a drought year? And then also look at the disease resistance characteristics for each of those varieties. We do know we had some wheat streak mosaic virus and some other issues around this year. So seeing the data from those trials and getting to pick out a variety that they think will work best on their farm. That's for those who will be purchasing seed. We do know that there's a lot of farmers that save their own seed and will be using that as well. So that'll be ongoing. Hopefully we will continue to get to these spotty rains we've been having over the last week or two. Those have really helped with our soil moisture in some areas, but as I mentioned, they've been very spotty. So There's still a lot of dry conditions out there. We'll certainly need more moisture, and that becomes even more critical when we get into that planting window. In terms of seed supply, talking to growers, it sounds like it's going to be more expensive this year, and also, you know, some concern about getting the variety that they want. It sounds like we're going to have adequate seed supplies of quality seed, but there may be some varieties that are more limited than others. And so making sure that they have those conversations with their seed suppliers as early as possible, as well as if you save seed, we have some recommendations from Texas A&M AgriLife on our website about how to get that seed tested, and then some other considerations as you plant that seed. So a lot of work to do between now and that planting time.
Well, Steely, there's been some regulatory changes happening for Texas wheat and wheat producers. What are some of those changes that are happening for some of those producers, you know, coming into this next year?
Yeah, well, one of the most important things that we've seen, it kind of bounces back and forth on what kind of action we're looking at. Sometimes it's a court action that impacts the regulatory framework that our farmers are dealing with, and sometimes it's just action from a federal agency. But what we've seen is a rapidly changing landscape. One of the most recent news items we've been following is there was a court action that actually impacts the Endangered Species Act. So under the previous administration, under President Trump, there was a few rules put in place to kind of loosen some of the endangered species protections make them more reasonable. Where threatened species were not treated exactly the same as endangered species, as well as some economic considerations that were put into some of the decision making. And a recent court action did vacate those rules, so we would revert back to the previous rules that would be a little bit more stringent. We'll have to wait and see if that decision is appealed or what other actions are taken by the court system on this issue, but that's one of the changes that have happened. And again, it's just really part of this bigger picture that we're seeing. So we're seeing, you know, a new look at the waters of the U.S. That raises some concerns for agriculture on what will those new definitions be. We've seen a lot of action out of the EPA, just recent actions on changing their rules for atrazine, another look at seed treatments. And then biological evaluations, both the process for that has been changed, as well as some new releases on glyphosate and some other products that are very important for agriculture. So I just think it's important that, you know, our industry groups and farmers stay aware of all of these changes, because it does seem like it's hard to keep up with all of the news that's coming out. But through the National Association of Wheat Growers and our work here at Texas Wheat, we try to make sure that we maintain awareness of all of these changes and then also weigh in. There's several comment periods that will be open on a lot of these issues I've discussed. And so as an industry, putting in those comments and, you know, telling the side of agriculture and our wheat farmers, I think it's very important. But just a thing that's, you know, changing and having a lot of news items here recently.
You brought up a good point, Celie, about, you know, getting the voice out there of production and producers. And I read a USDA headline that the National Wheat Growers finally put out some results from their survey about what they wanted from the Farm Bill. And some of the key highlights they talked about was, you know, crop insurance, you know, having that ERP more directed towards, you know, having it there available and stuff like that. Are you going to see some of these, you know, products that, you know, the producers wanted throughout the nation in this next Farm Bill as they start talking more in depth about getting it, you know, squared away, planned away, and getting it passed?
Yeah, certainly that's the goal. There's a lot of field hearings that are ongoing right now. Just saw a new announcement for one of those from the House Ag Committee. And so it's very important and timely that, as you mentioned, we put out those, you know, kind of survey results from farmers. I actually had a NOG board meeting where they talked through and decided on what the final list would be. So a lot of opportunity for farmer input on what they wanted to see. Continue to face, you know, budget challenges and some of those asks, but I've got a farmer on my board that tells me constantly, if we don't ask, we sure won't get it. So we've been asking for a lot of those changes and improvements, like you mentioned, the things that the farmers put in that survey that they would like to see through the next Farm Bill.
Well, and hopefully, you know, those voices are getting heard out there. And if you have any, you know, comments or concerns or want something heard, don't feel shy. Don't do anything. Just go ahead, get a hold of somebody, you know, whether it be a representative, Texas Wheat, fill out in surveys, whatever it may be, get your voice out there so agriculture can be heard. But Celie, I know that the Wheat Food Council is celebrating a birthday this coming up. How is that going?
Yeah, so a great celebration here of 50 years of the Wheat Foods Council. And it's extra special for us here in Texas because Texas is one of the groups that met in 1972 and stood up this organization. So at the time, there was a lot of, you know, hype and misinformation about the healthfulness or questionable healthfulness of including carbs in your diet. And so these wheat growers had some concerns about that. They wanted to make sure that the record was straight and that people had factual information about their diet. And so they met and stood up this Wheat Foods Council. And, you know, the Wheat Foods Council has the same mission today that it had in 1972, and that is to increase awareness of grains as an essential part of a healthy diet. You know, we talk about food pyramid or making those healthful decisions in your life, and it's all about balance. And wheat has a very critical role in that balance in grain products. And so maintaining that awareness of that, as well as providing factual, science-based information from experts, is still the critical goal of that organization. Just here recently, we had Darby Campsey out of our office, had the opportunity to serve as president of that organization. So very highly involved farmers and staff members here from Texas in what they do. One of their most recent activities they had was a chef workshop where they have, you know, chefs from fast food industries or chain restaurants, you know, people who have a very wide reach across the United States come in and learn about different methods and different recipes that they could put on their menu in these restaurants and fast food chains. So that was very, very successful workshop that they had there at the Culinary Institute of America. And so they're looking forward to doing more of those products and seminars and workshops in the coming year, as well as, you know, their consumer outreach. They do a lot of really great videos. They put out recipes. So if anybody's interested in learning more about wheat foods or, you know, what is this scientific information about the healthfulness of wheat in my diet, they want to learn about different types of flour or see different recipes that they can be using. Wheatfoods.org is a great resource. So you can get there by going to texaswheat.org. We can link you to their website, or you can get there directly. You can Google Wheat Foods Council, or again, wheatfoods.org. But it's really just a one-stop shop for all of that, you know, really great information related to wheat.
So Steely, you know, in, you know, today's society, we talk a lot about it on, you know, my podcast, Pasture to Pavement, of trends and fads of, you know, society, social media, and, you know, celebrities and whatnot. And a huge thing that, you know, a lot of people talk about is no carb diets and whatnot. Are you seeing a lot more change in people, you know, kind of moving away from, you know, eating whole grains or grains? I know that that's kind of like a small population, but are you seeing more of a growth in that kind of aspect, or is it kind of just stagnant and not really?
What we've seen over time is that it tends to be a little bit cyclical. We have these fad diets in American culture. It's just part of our culture where we'll see, you know, a no-fat diet versus a no-carb diet, and they tend to be pretty cyclical, and they last a few years, and they kind of fade away, and then they come back. So what we've seen in terms of flour disappearance, that's kind of our main indicator of how we can tell, you know, flour consumption by per capita in the United States. That has trended down over time, but it's mostly stabilized at this point. So we're not seeing people, you know, increase their flour intake or decrease. It's been pretty fairly stable. During the pandemic, you know, during the outbreak of coronavirus, we saw some changes. People were baking more at home. People were demanding, you know, more product that wasn't necessarily on the shelves at the time. And so that's been very interesting to watch, and we'll have to kind of move our way further away from that event before we can really wrap our arms around all of that data. But at this point, to answer your question, I would say that our flour disappearance has been fairly stable, but we do tend to see those fad diets kind of come in and out of that cycle over time.
Well, Steely, if any producers out there have any questions, or even consumers out there about, you know, wheats and diets and stuff, how can they get a hold of Texas Wheat or find a way to get a hold and answer their questions?
So I would recommend that they go to texaswheat.org. We have a contact page there with all of our phone numbers, emails, and please feel free to get hold of us.
Well, thank you so much, Steely. It's a pleasure to talk about wheat and what's happening out there in Texas, as well as the nation in the wheat industry.
Yes, sir. Thank you.